This is VOA News. I'm David Byrd. Legal experts gave an American history lesson on Capitol Hill as they testified in the House impeachment probe on Wednesday. AP's Sagar Meghani has details.
At the Judiciary Committee's first impeachment hearing, Stanford's Pamela Karlan was among three legal experts arguing the president committed impeachable offenses with actions toward Ukraine, saying drawing a foreign government into American elections is an especially serious abuse of power.
Because it undermines democracy itself.
On the other side, George Washington University's Jonathan Turley argues Democrats have not proven any impeachable offenses and warned them against moving too fast to oust a duly elected president without a better case.
You're going to leave half the country behind.
But panel chair Gerald Nadler says with the election approaching, Democrats must hold the president in check if the facts demand it.
President Trump will almost certainly try again.
The probe remains a partisan brawl, what ranking member Doug Collins calls a sham.
This is not an impeachment. This is just a simple railroad job.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
A top Justice Department official said Wednesday that federal prosecutors have brought foreign bribery charges against a record number of individuals this year. Brian Bischofsky said that so far the department has brought international corruption charges against 34 individuals and obtained a record 30 guilty pleas by individuals in similar cases. The Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division said that both numbers are the highest on record. The figures reflect the Justice Department's recent focus on targeting individuals in foreign bribery cases, while encouraging companies to report misconduct and to cooperate with authorities in exchange for leniency. For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. Japanese Dr. Tetsu Nakamura, who devoted decades of his life to helping people in Afghanistan, has been killed, along with five others, in a gun attack on his vehicle near Jalalabad. We get the details from Reuters' David Doyle.
Nakamura had been involved in rebuilding Afghan irrigation and agriculture and had recently been granted honorary Afghan citizenship for his decades of humanitarian work. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said he was shocked at the death.
Nakamura-sensei wa...
Dr. Nakamura has made many contributions in the field of medicine and irrigation. It is very shocking to hear that he has passed away in such an incident.
No group has yet claimed responsibility, but a spokesman for the Afghan Taliban said the militant group was not involved. A local official said police are searching for the gunmen, adding that he believed Nakamura was targeted because of his work.
That's David Doyle of Reuters reporting. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un mounted a white horse again as North Korea announced on Wednesday it would soon convene a rare meeting of the ruling party's leaders. As Francesca Lina reports, analysts say that that might signal preparations for a more confrontational stance with the rest of the world.
It was the second time in 2 months that he has visited North Korea's sacred Mount Paektu on horseback, something he often does around the time of major developments in North Korea. The United States has called for North Korea to give up significant portions of its nuclear arsenal before punishing international sanctions are eased, while Pyongyang has accused the United States of gangster-like demands for unilateral disarmament. U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Stephen Biegun has previously downplayed the year-end deadline. But analysts say Kim's meeting with top leaders sometime in late December and before the year-end deadline underscores how serious North Korea is about making a major decision.
That's Francesca Lina of Reuters. China responded with a swift condemnation after the House of Representatives approved a bill targeting its mass crackdown on ethnic Muslim minorities. AP's Karen Chamas reports.
The legislation condemns the detention of an estimated 1 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs and others in China's far west Xinjiang region. Chinese government departments published a slew of strongly worded rebukes to the bill, calling it another example of U.S. interference into China's internal affairs. The Foreign Affairs Commission of China's legislature says the U.S. has turned a blind eye to its efforts to combat terrorism and safeguard human rights in Xinjiang. The commission says the bill disregards the facts and mixes up black and white. I'm Karen Chamas.
For more, be sure to visit voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan parties have again failed, at least for now, to agree on the number of states that the country should have.
The parties have failed to reach a consensus. Therefore, the mediator has asked or requested to the parties to adjourn the meeting so that it can give room for chatter diplomacy with President Salva Kiir and the King of Bashar.
Wogbof Baluwang is the SPLM-IO Director of Information and Public Relations. Sudanese youth celebrate the dissolution of former President Bashir's party. Ugandan President Museveni comes under criticism for leading an anti-corruption march. And the Peace Corps reduces its volunteers in rural Liberia.
The Peace Corps volunteers are not totally leaving Liberia. There are some areas where they have had logistical problems. We recognize that, and we know that with the efforts that are being made by the government to resolve some of the issues, including the issue with liquidity, they will come back.
Eugene Nabo is Liberia's information minister. Mugabe's lawyer disputes allegations that the late president lived a lavish life. And Malawi Catholic bishops appeal for peace as a court ruling about the country's disputed election looms. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan parties have again failed, at least for now, to agree on the number of states that the country should have. Representatives of the South Sudan government and the main opposition SPLM-IO met for 2 days in Juba under the auspices of South Africa and the regional group Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. The parties failed again in May to implement the security arrangement and the number of states. Puok Both Baluwang is SPLM-IO Director of Information and Public Relations. He says the mediators have asked the parties to adjourn the meeting to make room for shuttle diplomacy between President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar.
Actually, the parties failed to break the deadlock over the number of the states during this 3 days meeting, because the meeting was scheduled on the 2nd and the 3rd of December, but it was extended by the moderators of the meeting for giving more room for discussion regarding the issue in question. But the parties have failed to reach a consensus. Therefore, the mediator has asked or requested to the parties to adjourn the meeting so that it can give room for chatter diplomacy with President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar.
Tell me, what can you say to the people of South Sudan? Is this another recipe for failure?
Yeah, you know, all the options was discussed per the agreement, because the agreement stipulated that failure to reach consensus regarding the number of the states in the IBC and the TBC, the third option would be going to referendum. But now, according to the situation that we have in South Sudan, there's no conducive security situation and there's no conducive environment in South Sudan. So we all, the SPLM, I would think that the best option is that for the parties to discuss this issue, and fail to that, we should go back to the report of the IBC, which is recommended that going back to 10 states. But as I mentioned, the meeting was adjourned to give more room for discussion and for a chatter diplomacy between the two principals, President Salva and Dr. Riek Machar. And we would like to tell the people of South Sudan that we are working hard to resolve this issue. And this issue could be resolved with this 100 days. We are the SPLM-SPLM-IO, adhere to resolve this issue politically and as per the agreement. And we hope that our partners in the agreement, particularly the government, should have the genuine will to resolve this issue as well.
Pukbuf Baluwang is the SPLM-IO Director of Information and Public Relations. He was speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Some Sudanese youth have been celebrating the dissolution of former President Omar al-Bashir's National Congress Party. Young people painted and drew graphics on public streets and cleaning up their neighborhoods in celebration of the new development. Michael Atit spoke to some of the young people in Khartoum's eastern Sahafa neighborhood and has this story from Khartoum.
Hundreds of Sudanese youth chanted the names of NCP leaders, including former President Omar al-Bashir, Ali Usman Taha and Ahmed Haroun, who they say disappointed the Sudanese people. The youth gathered at the Sahafa High Bridge to celebrate the dissolution of the National Congress Party. Some youth say they chose to express their joy by cleaning streets as a way to create awareness of the development in their neighborhoods. Muhammad Ahmed Abdul Samad, leader of Munjizun Youth Initiative, says young people took it upon themselves to repaint the entire high bridge, adding visual graphics that portray the theme of the revolution, freedom, peace and justice. Speaking in Arabic, Abdul Samad says these are the patriotic values that were missing from the Bashir's regime.
For the past 30 years, they didn't give anything to this country. What we saw and witnessed are only war, discrimination, and segregation among our people. We would like to see our transitional government focusing much on the issue of peace.
Last week, Sudan's Sovereign Council and Cabinet endorsed three bills, including one that dissolves the National Congress Party and bans it from carrying any political activities in the country. Nabila Salah Muhammad is one of the few female painters who are part of the Munjizun Youth Initiative. Munjizun is an Arabic word for accomplishers. Speaking in Arabic, Salah says some graphics are aimed at paying tribute to fallen heroes who sacrificed their lives to secure the revolution.
Most of the graphics that we do here are two types. One signifies our struggle during the revolution, or drawing our fallen heroes and heroines in addition to demands of the revolution. The second one is about educating our public through messages that allow them to keep our environment clean all the time.
Muhannad Mahmoud Habiballah is a graphics designer who works for a private company in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Habiballah says he feels honored to serve his nation through the Munjizun initiative.
We feel proud that we are serving humanity by providing our community through a voluntary work. Most of us here as youth, we never met before. But through our interaction together in voluntary work, we are able to unite from different neighborhoods and know each other through this initiative.
Osman Haddadi, who owns a hardware store in Sahafa Market, says dissolving the NCP encouraged him to contribute to the celebration by providing paint from his store so that the youth could paint over images of Bashir's regime. Speaking in Arabic, he congratulated the transitional government for dissolving the NCP.
Some of our members were a bit hesitant that the transitional government is unable to take a strong decision on the party of the previous regime, but they surprised us with their recent law. This latest decision has given a push to our people, and it coincided with our voluntary work, and we are celebrating two events at a go.
Youth in many other Sudanese towns such as Gadarif, Adbara, Sinar, Medani, Al-Fashir, Al-Ubaid, and many others are doing the same thing on public streets, painting over faces from the previous regime with new pictures, including portrayals of ancient Sudanese kings and sultans that symbolize freedom, peace, and justice. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 5th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. The longtime lawyer of the late Robert Mugabe has disputed allegations that the former Zimbabwe president lived lavishly and that he had more property than what the Zimbabwe Herald newspaper revealed. On the contrary, Terence Hussein says the late Mugabe lived a modest life and that the 10 cars he is said to have owned are vintage cars and not modern expensive cars. Hussein confirmed reports that Mr. Mugabe did not leave behind a will, but he also downplayed the importance of the will, saying it is not required by law. Hussein tells Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe's service that all speculations surrounding the late Mugabe's wealth are fake news that has yet to be proven by anyone.
Well, I think that's a fake bit of news has been clearly debunked over the years. That so-called property has never existed. Nobody has ever been able to come forward to say that he had this or that property outside. The truth of the matter is he simply didn't. as you can see from the list that was produced, we lived a very, very modest life. And I think that's kind of annoying a lot of people, and they're trying to find something. Unfortunately, they're going to find nothing.
How about on the farms? There are reports that he had 10 or 15 farms.
Well, there again goes those myths. Produce them. Show us that they were in his name. Show us that he was allocated them. Nobody's able to come forward with him. So once again, those were myths that were being peddled, but the good thing about it is the truth always prevails.
And lastly, there are some, you said the former president lived a modest life, but there are some who are saying maybe he transferred most of these assets to his family members, like the wife, for example. Therefore, he had much more than what is being reported.
I think those people are very good at speculating, but I wonder where, whilst they're speculating, they should try and bring some facts to the table. Obviously, they haven't done so, and it looks like they never will be able to achieve that.
There are also 10 cars that are listed as belonging to him. What kind of cars are these?
Yes. Okay. From my understanding, they are vintage cars. They are old cars. Cars he kept for sentimental reasons. You are a car owner like everybody else. You know, when you have a car, sometimes you'll have your first car. You try and put it up onto the market, but you just simply can't let it go. Those are the type of cars we're talking about.
So far, you have not found any will?
No, we haven't found any will. I think the issue of the will, that's another issue that people are running away with. There's no law that compels you to draft a will. The only reason a person will draft a will is so that he can avoid his estate being distributed according to the precepts of the law. So if you want to choose how your property is devolved, you will do a will. But if you are happy with the way the law will apportion your property, you won't draft a will. So let us assume that's probably what Comrade President was after.
Terence Hussein is the longtime lawyer for the late President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Catholic bishops in Malawi have appealed for peace as the country awaits a court ruling on the May 21, 2019 presidential election. That ruling is expected anytime this month. The bishops called on Malawians to respect the rule of law, even if the court decision does not favor them. Two political parties have challenged the results in Malawi's constitutional court on grounds the election was fraudulent. Civil society organizations have held protests demanding the resignation of Malawi Elections Commission Chair Justice Jane Ansah. Thomas Nsusa is the Archbishop of Blantyre, Malawi's commercial capital.
The bishops in Malawi are really following on the proceedings at the court about the general elections that took place on the 1st of May. At the same time, the reaction of the people after the announcement of the elections were so diverse. There were some demonstrations in many quarters of the parts of the country. And up to this moment, the past few weeks, we have seen the silent demonstrations, people not taken, gone to the street anymore. We have seen that they are really following the cases in court. So the bishops would like really to say, yes, now it is quiet. Let us listen carefully. Let us follow what is happening in the courts. And we remain like that until the judgment that comes out within a few days or a few weeks to come. That's why the bishop said, let us continue to remind the people that the verdict is very, very, very soon. The people should keep quiet.
Thomas Nsusa is the Archbishop of Blantyre and also a member of the quasi-religious group known as the Public Affairs Committee. You're speaking with us from the Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni led a march against corruption on Wednesday, but critics were quick to dismiss the march as a publicity stunt. Uganda has one of the worst rankings in the world for corruption, with activists pointing fingers at the highest levels of government. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni on Wednesday led hundreds of people in a march against corruption, calling corrupt people parasites who steal public wealth. Museveni said to end corruption, leaders must develop the economy.
Commercial agriculture, industry, services and jobs and ICT. Because that's how we can create jobs and wealth and income so that our people do not have a material basis for acute need, which forces them to be corrupt.
But critics note that last year, Transparency International ranked Uganda as one of the most corrupt countries in Africa, below Kenya, Mauritania, and Nigeria. ActionAid International Uganda says Museveni marching against corruption is ironic, as his government is to blame for much of it.
He is the chief enforcement, law enforcement officer of Uganda. He's therefore the one whom the citizens are supposed to walk and show and demonstrate that they are angry about corruption. Now, to whom is he angry? So we really think that he's playing politics.
Critics accuse Uganda's Inspector General of only holding lower-level officials or private citizens to account for corruption. The inspector acknowledged that some top government officials hide behind Museveni, but argues the president is sincere in tackling corruption.
You see, when he says, I am ready to fight, it means he's ready to give them up. So that if you start looking for them, and to be true to him, if you are investigating a person who is near him, he doesn't say stop investigating. He says, bring me the evidence.
But Uganda's Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Olanya, says he is not convinced that corruption is now at the top of Museveni's agenda.
Unless we take this from our own front lines and extend the frontier to cover other areas, it's a waste of time. It's a public show for nothing. I come because it's a public show. But deep down, I know we are going right back to practice the same damn corruption that we claim to fight.
Nonetheless, Uganda's lawmakers and judges Wednesday renewed public vows to be honest and not accept bribes. The anti-corruption events blocked all roads leading to central Kampala, forcing many skeptical passers-by to walk for over 6 kilometers to get to work. Halima Asmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The Liberian government says a shipment of millions of United States dollars arrived in the country yesterday, Wednesday, contrary to allegations that the government has suspiciously been printing Liberian dollars. Liberia has been experiencing liquidity problems amid challenging economic times. Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says the government hopes the new money will solve the country's liquidity situation. This comes as the Peace Corps organization has announced a reduction in the number of its volunteers working in rural Liberia. The Peace Corps said Liberia's liquidity crunch has affected its ability to sustain the volunteers in the rural areas. Information Minister Eugene Nambwe.
That is true. The volunteers who are in Liberia are being reduced. The numbers are being reduced from several localities. We are aware of that. And as a government, we've always appreciated the work of the Peace Corps volunteers. You know, they are reducing their staff due to internal matters within their own system. I think it's about 35% reduction due to their own internal matters, but we still recognize the great work that they have continued to do in Liberia and continue to work with them through the Ministry of Information and through the Ministry of Youth and Sports.
You say due to their own internal matter. I have a release in front of me, Mr. Minister, from the Peace Corps. It says that over the past years, Liberia's economy has faced a number of challenges, including the recent inability to reliably obtain needed funds from banks upcountry and in Monrovia. The liquidity crunch is affecting our ability to sustain volunteers working far from Monrovia. Are you saying that the Peace Corps did not say this to you?
No, they presented us a situation that they have some logistical issues, and we as a government, we do recognize that. We have not hidden the fact that we are operating on an economy that is under stress, and as a result of the situation with the economy, there are other attending factors. But the Peace Corps volunteers are not totally leaving Liberia. there are some areas where they have had logistical problems, and we recognize that, and we know that with the efforts that are being made by the government to resolve some of the issues, including the issue with liquidity, they will come back, you know. So, yes, it's a strenuous time for Liberia, but we as a government, we have a responsibility to fix the problems, and we are very focused on doing that. So, yes, it is true that the Peace Corps volunteers have been reduced. I think it's about 35%, particularly those who are in leeward counties where they have no access to the banking system, where the liquidity situation has been affecting their operations very seriously. And we have interacted with them at the level of the sector ministries interacting with them. We recognize what they are going through, including what the entire Liberian population is going through, and this is why the government is working overtime to resolve some of these issues so that we can get back on an even keel.
I think I saw somewhere where it mentioned insecurity. What do you want to say about that, about insecurity in Liberia?
Liberia is very secure. The crime rate in our country is low. The security apparatus have been working very properly, and if anybody will cite security as an issue, we have had hundreds of Peace Corps volunteers in Liberia, hundreds of expatriates. There has been no incidents, you know, that has come to the fore about them being insecure, being attacked. So you know, should be my witness that our country, in spite of the economic situation that we are undergoing, you know, the historical problems that the government inherited that it is dealing with, we have maintained a security situation in the country that is appreciable.
Is your government, Mr. Minister, engaged in what I would say probably a scheme to bring money into the country?
Well, there has been a lot of social media posts by members of the opposition that the government is surreptitiously bringing in newly printed Liberian dollars. This is not true. In keeping with the mandate and functions of the Central Bank of Liberia, the government imported millions of United States dollars to handle the liquidity situation at the banks, and the monies arrived in keeping with normal protocol. So yes, there is a shipment of United States dollars that have come into the country, and it is in keeping with normal central bank protocol and central bank function. So there is nothing surreptitious about this. There's nothing covert. This is normal function of the central bank, particularly at a time that the country and the banks in the country are undergoing liquidity problems. This is a move to fix the problem, and it should be a good news for Liberians. You know, we have issues with money not being in the banks of Liberia. You just mentioned the situation with the Peace Corps. You know, so what is the government supposed to do? Import rocks? No. We've brought in money to fix the liquidity situation in the country.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Information Minister. He was speaking with us from London, United Kingdom. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Sudan parties have again failed, at least for now, to agree on the number of states that the country should have. Representatives of the South Sudan government and the main opposition SPLMIO met for 2 days in Juba under the auspices of South Africa and the regional group, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD. The parties failed again in May to implement the security arrangement and the number of states. Paul Bof Baluang, SPLMIO Director of Information and Public Relations, says the mediators have asked the parties to adjourn the meeting to make room for shuttle diplomacy between President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar. And the longtime lawyer of the late Robert Mugabe has disputed allegations that the former Zimbabwe president lived lavishly and that he had more property. That is it for this Thursday, December 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 2019 has been the year of Ghanaians in the diaspora returning to their roots in their West African homeland. The year of return on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On December 6th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, Holland Oates,
and George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme,
December 6th on The Voice of America.